Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. We have my favorite guest, IQ Al Rasooli, on the line. IQ is the foremost expert on Islam and understands better than anyone alive today the corrosive nature of the Islamic religion. IQ, welcome back to Shattering Myths.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
IQ, you may not be aware, but you may also be aware that Kerry was outed today twice. I'm pretty sure you know one of the two, but the first of the two is the picture that he's holding up that shows all of the dead bodies wrapped in shrouds and small children, infant bodies among them, as proof that this was a gas attack in Syria, is actually a picture from Iraq.
I wouldn't be surprised. They've been doing it a lot. The Muslim Brotherhood has been doing it. Qaeda has been doing it. They take it from Palestinian territory, put it in Iraq, from Iraq into Syria, from Syria into anywhere else. Yes. I know about it.
Yeah, any place that there's dead. And by the way, you don't even have to have dead bodies. You can wrap, because it's the Muslim burial technique, is you just wrap people in white gauze, and there you go. That in fact, the picture that he is using, showing, here's proof, look at all the people that we show in this picture that are killed, that was a picture that was used to justify the invasion of Iraq. The second bit of news that took place today, and we're going to transition from this into a very interesting clip, is that Putin yesterday called the Secretary of State of the United States an outright liar. And he said the issue here is that to suggest that the al-Nusra Front, which is the dominant arm of the Syrian resistance, that is by far, I mean, the al-Nusra Front is the dominant player in the Syrian resistance, that the al-Nusra Front isn't al-Qaeda, and that there are moderate Muslims in the resistance with whom the United States can partner. And Putin said, that is an outright lie. What's your reaction to Putin's comments and Kerry's statement?
I agree with Putin 100% that Kerry is a liar. I add to it that he is a criminal, as criminally uninformed or willfully deceptive as Hillary Clinton before him, when he told Congress that al-Qaeda represents only a small fraction of those opposing Assad, when everyone in the Arab media that I deal with knows they are actually over 95%.
Yeah, that is the truth. Yeah, you know, I am probably the least interested in al-Qaeda of anyone who speaks on this subject, because I view al-Qaeda as being irrelevant, and I view them as being irrelevant because if you the common denominator of every Islamic terrorist group is the Quran and Hadith, is Muhammad, and the affiliation with one group or another is essentially irrelevant, and so I'm the least al-Qaeda focused individual in the world. Now, that being the case, I do want to make an exception here. Zawahiri, who is the head of al-Qaeda, has specifically made press releases here recently that describe the al-Nusra Front as his most allied terrorist organization in the world. The head of the al-Nusra Front has in press releases recently said that he takes his direction and his allegiance is for directly to Zawahiri, that he is in fact operating under the arm of al-Qaeda. There was a spat here recently between the Islamic State of Iraq, which the West wants to identify with al-Qaeda, saying that the majority of the initial fighters and a huge percentage even of the current fighters in al-Nusra Front came from the Islamic State in Iraq, which we the West calls al-Qaeda. And there was a spat between the two as to whether one was a derivative of the other and therefore took orders from the other, or whether or not they both were on equal planes and both took orders from Zawahiri, the head of al-Qaeda. And the al-Nusra Front's answer was, we're co-equals, we're both part of al-Qaeda. And so from their lips, there is the wholesale acknowledgement that they are Al-Qaeda. And that would represent 90% of the rebels who were opposing Assad. And so in Afghanistan and previously in Iraq and in Pakistan today, we killed another. We are killing those that we associate with Al-Qaeda. While in Syria, we now want to bomb the Assad regime and arm Al-Qaeda. Is there any sense that can be made of that?
Well, as I said about, for example, John McCain, he should be put in a mental asylum, with all your respect, of course.
Well, I would have no respect for Senator John McCain, whom I know personally. Yesterday we devoted our program to him saying that Allahu Akbar is the same as a Christian saying, thank God.
Well, this is why I said he should be in a mental asylum. That's exactly why.
Yeah, he really should be. And the reason he should be in a mental asylum, it's one thing to make a mistake. We all make mistakes. I make mistakes. You probably don't, IQ, because you're smarter than
me.
Okay. We all make mistakes. And if you make a mistake and you just say, listen, I'll study better. I'll correct. Thank you for bringing my attention to the mistake. I'll go on from here. Allahu Akbar is the essence of 9/11, where 3,000 Americans were killed. It is the essence of Islam. There is no saying in Islam more important than Allahu Akbar. And it means Allah is greatest. It is the Islamic prayer of fear. It was first ordered by Muhammad himself at Kabar as he was perpetrating one of the most gruesome terrorist raids in human history. And it was exactly the confession that was given by the 19 Muslims that flew suicide bombing missions into our buildings on 9/11. And to say that it means thank God is putrid. And when you realize that he's in a position to commit to the United States military on behalf of fundamentalist Muslim jihadists screaming Allahu Akbar as they cut off the heads of Catholic priests, as they blow the brains out of little girls while after having raped them, again, a mental institution may be too kind.
Yada, I want to correct people.
Okay.
Allahu Akbar. Mm-hmm. It's called the terror verse.
Yes.
Even in Arabic, it is called the terror verse. They use it before they slaughter unbelievers or anyone who is a Muslim of the different sect.
Right.
It's a terror verse.
Yeah.
Anybody who shouts Allahu Akbar cannot be secular.
No.
Anybody who shouts Allahu Akbar is Al-Qaeda. Cannot be anything different. And as you said, it doesn't matter what name they go under. The foundation is the Quran. End of conversation.
Correct. Yeah, all good Muslims have to follow Muhammad's example. They have to follow Allah's orders, Allah's example, and Muhammad's example and Allah's orders are in the Quran and Hadith. Muhammad was a terrorist, and Allah, who is Muhammad's pet rock, also claims to be a terrorist. And so you cannot be a good Muslim and not be a terrorist, and therefore the most important saying for any good Muslim is Allahu Akbar, and it is not only the prayer of fear, it is the terrorist verse, it is what all jihadists say when they're perpetrating the most disgusting and deadly and destructive acts that can be perpetrated on humankind.
I would like to remind Americans, when you watch the programs of jihadis shooting or lobbing rockets, every single one of them shouts Allahu Akbar at every single instant of time. What I'm getting at, they shoot a rocket, they shout Allahu Akbar, and then they shoot a rocket. And then
right.
Shout Allahu Akbar, and they shoot another rocket. They murder somebody, they shout Allahu Akbar. It is so sickening. It is so vile. And it shows, I mean, it's 24 hours of television, and you have this man called McCain to say that it's the same as the Christian one. Thank God.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable how stupid we have become, how grotesquely immoral. I mean, this is not a mistake by this man. He has witnessed the killing and ravaging of Islam for now more than a decade. He's not ignorant. He said this on purpose. It was a deliberate lie. It's like the Muslims themselves who will lie to the American people and say jihad is a spiritual struggle, when you and I would pay anyone $100,000 if they could prove otherwise. Prove that point. It's jihad is a declaration by Allah and Muhammad to wage war against all humankind using all weapons available and to kill anyone who doesn't surrender to Muhammad and Islam. Now, we're going to, after the break, I'm going to introduce now a clip that we're going to play. It's actually two of them. After the break. The first of them is from Wesley Clark. Wesley Clark is a four-star U.S. General, General of the Army. He was the valedictorian of West Point, not your average dummy. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He spent 34 years in the Department of Defense. He received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO from 1997 to 2000. He was even a Democrat presidential candidate in 2004. In 2007, his Westpac endorsed Hillary Clinton and then switched to Obama. He is Jewish on his father's side. He was tainted. His negative mark is that he was tainted by Bosnia and Vietnam. He was head of NATO during the Kosovo War, and he ultimately retired in May of 2000. Now, when we return, we're going to play a first clip from him talking about the grand strategy of America to invade and control a number of countries, one of which is Iran, and that this, the invasion of Iraq and now the bombing of Syria, is all part of America's plan to use military force to control such countries. Now, before we play that in our next segment, IQ, I would ask you, how well did America's invasion of Iraq go? Did America make Iraq better or worse with its invasion?
Worse. Catastrophically worse, in fact. Catastrophically worse.
And what do you think the likelihood would be that America would make Syria or Iran better if it were to choose to bomb and invade either of those countries?
I don't think they will be able to, but if they wanted to, and if they tried, they would lose and make it even worse.
Yeah, that is true. So when we return, we're going to play the clip from four-star General Wesley Clark. As we introduced at the end of the last segment, this clip that you're going to hear, the speaker is four-star General Wesley Clark, valedictorian of West Point, Rhodes Scholar. Presidential Freedom Medal of Freedom recipient and commander of NATO.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, today. And he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
That's stunning, isn't it, IQ? There's a couple of things, though, that before I get your comments on the overall strategy that the United States has decided here. 9 days after America invaded, or 9 days after 9/11 occurred, America had made the decision to invade Iraq, a decision that cost a million Iraqi lives, 10,000 American lives, and squandered $6 trillion of our treasury. I had no justification whatsoever to do so. All of the justification they provided turned out to be untrue. And yet, 9 days after 9/11, the nation had decided that that's what it was going to do because it didn't know what else to do. What's your response to that, IQ?
It sounds outrageous to me, honestly. I mean, are these people mad or are we mad? I don't know. Why would anybody go out of their way to start a war unending without a result, without knowing what the consequences are, spending trillions of dollars, like what Obama is trying to do now? It's
right.
Exactly, it's a repeat performance.
Right.
This is the same guy who was crucifying Bush for going to war.
Right.
Without consent from the United Nations, without consent from Congress, without having proof, and he's doing exactly the same thing.
Exactly. All based on false information, once again. And both IQ and I would take the position that while it is highly unlikely that Assad used chemical weapons, because there was no motive for him to do so, in fact, it would be catastrophic for him to have done so, and all of the evidence shows that the weapons were deployed by the rebels themselves because they had not only the means but also the motive to use them. That it, from our perspective, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you had Assad personally loading the rocket in the mortar launcher to send the sarin gas into a nursery class filled with 10,000 infants. It doesn't matter. And the reason it doesn't matter is that there's nothing that we can do to make the situation better, and that our involvement will not only make the situation worse, more lives will die, but in addition, it will put us in a more vulnerable position. Is that a reasonable summation of your point of view also, IQ?
100%. There is absolutely no reason. Why should America enter? Why not the Arabs? Why not France, right, and Germany and England do the dirty work instead of America?
In this case, since Qatar and Saudi Arabia have supplied 100% of the weapons, 100% may be in a slight exaggeration, but virtually all of the weapons and many of the fighters to attack the Syrian government. Since America has sold Saudi Arabia and Qatar collectively a couple of $100 billion worth of our most sophisticated weapon systems, and it's their fight, they're using it as a proxy war against Shia Islam. Why don't they? If they think that this is the right thing to do, why don't they bomb Assad?
The question I'm asking. Why,
right,
America?
Right. Oh, even to go beyond all of this, recognizing that if the civil war in Syria is all but over, Assad won. If we weaken Assad at this point, the civil war in Syria continues, and the death toll goes from 100,000 to 200,000 or more. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Before we play the second clip, which is first Hillary Clinton, followed by Zbigniew Brzezinski, and then Barack Hussein Obama, I'd like to share with IQ what I think the only three potential outcomes of the United States bombing of Syria will lead to, and find out if IQ concurs. I think there are three potential outcomes. They are bad, worse, and infinitely worse. By the United States bombing any part of Assad's military operation, this war, which was all but over in terms of the Syrian civil war, will go on. And it, particularly if the United States concurrently provides more weapons to the jihadists, the Syrian civil war, rather than coming to a close as it was doing, will go on, and more than 200,000 people will die. That's bad. Worse, is that the United States bombs the Syrian capability to defend itself militarily and arms the jihadists that are fighting to overturn him, they will overthrow the Assad government, at which case we will have a government that is run entirely by fundamentalist Muslims, and it will be the single most despicable government in the world today. And death and carnage will follow that. That's worse. Now, infinitely worse is China and Russia are on the other side. If the United States starts a war where China and Russia feel compelled to defend their ally, then we're in World War III, and billions of people will die. Those are the only three potential outcomes of the United States punishing Assad for their claim that he may or may not have used chemical weapons to kill upwards of 300 to 1,400 individuals. IQ, if I was my reasoning flawed in any way here, is there an outcome that I'm not seeing?
No. The outcomes are catastrophic. And by the way, the overflow of the damage will go to... next, it will go to Jordan and to Lebanon and Israel.
Right. And even to Saudi Arabia.
I'm leaving that one last, really. But definitely, Jordan will be the next one.
Yes. And let's explain why Jordan...
They've got over 580,000 people already there.
Yeah, and the reason that Jordan will be the next one is because the Jordanians allowed Saudi Arabia to truck surface-to-air missiles and anti-tank weapons through Jordan into Syria. And Assad said if they did that, there would be a price to pay. So,
my
yes.
question is possible. I need one simple question to the American listeners.
Yeah.
Why is America under Obama obsessed with 1,300 dead by a chemical weapon that might have been used by Assad or not, while ignoring completely Iran, which with a bomb will cause the death of hundreds of millions of people? That's what I want
right.
to know.
Yeah. And why are we obsessed with the potential death of 1,000 people in Syria when we didn't seem to care when Saddam Hussein was using American-supplied chemical weapons against Iran? Why didn't we care when the government of the Islamic government of the Sudan was killing 2.5 million animists and Christians? Why is it all of a sudden we care here and we don't care elsewhere? Why don't we care that these same Sunni Muslims have killed 6,000 people in Iraq this year alone through suicide bombings?
The other simple question is this. While he was playing golf on and off, 110,000 Syrians were murdered, butchered by both sides, and he didn't say anything.
Right.
All of a sudden 1,300 people are more important? I don't get it.
Well, it's because there's another agenda. What we're going to play now is a clip from Hillary Clinton that says something we've said a long time on this program, which is that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda were armed by the United States prior to the United States using arms against them, and that Zbigniew Brzezinski is the fellow who actually conceived the Taliban. He didn't conceive the Taliban. He conceived Al-Qaeda and used the Taliban in the first war against them. The voices you're going to hear are Hillary Clinton, followed by a commentator speaking, and then the voice of Zbigniew Brzezinski, National Security Advisor under Carter, and then finally President Barack Obama. Scott, could you play the second tape?
We also have a history of kind of moving in and out of Pakistan. I mean, let's remember here, the people we are fighting today, we funded 20 years ago.
Well, let's not just talk about this in a general sense. Who's running that operation?
U.S. National Security Advisor Brzezinski flew to Pakistan to set about rallying resistance. He wanted to arm the Mujahideen without revealing America's role. On the Afghan border near the Khyber Pass, he urged the soldiers of God to redouble their efforts.
we know of their deep belief in God, and we are confident that their struggle will succeed. That land over there is yours. You'll go back to it one day, because your fight will prevail, and you'll have your homes, your mosques back again, because your cause is right, and God is on your side.
Just in case you're thinking that this is irrelevant to our current situation, we should point out that Zinu Brzezinski is an acknowledged friend and mentor to Barack Obama.
He has proven to be an outstanding friend and somebody who I've learned an immense amount from. And for him to support me in this campaign and then be willing to come out here to Iowa is a testimony to his generosity. So if everybody could please give Dr. Brzezinski another round of applause.
All right, IQ, that is some of the most stunning tape that could ever be played. What is your reaction to, A, Hillary Clinton's statement, B, Zinu Brzezinski's statement that God is on their side, he was in Pakistan arming covertly the Mujahideen, the Taliban, and Al-Qaeda, saying that God was on their side, and then lastly, Obama embracing the Zabrinsky dogma.
They are all of the same, reading the same script. They are supporting the Muslims. All of them are supporting the Muslims against all logic. They are supporting the enemies of humanity. The Muslims are not against America only. The Muslims are not against Israel only. The Muslims are against Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, Jews, and anybody who is not a Muslim. 80% of current humanity, 5.5 billion people. And they're supporting them.
So I have a question. Would you trust a country that admitted that it was arming the Mujahideen, that would be the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, in Pakistan to go fight a war in Afghanistan, and only to turn around years later and 20 years later and declare war against its ally? Would you trust a country that deployed that kind of a tactic?
No.
So why are Americans patriotic? Why do Americans support their military? Why do Americans support their CIA? Why do they support their government when their government actually created the enemy that now it wants to sacrifice lives to go fight?
Well, to be fair, the Americans must support the army. But the army is not the one who initiates the war. It is the politicians who are doing it.
Yeah, but if you use a military to do only stupid, suicidal things, the military becomes the implement of suicide. America has been using its military in a suicidal fashion now for decades. You know, I understand that when a madman pulls the trigger of a gun to kill someone, that it isn't the gun's fault. But our military is the gun that is killing us. When you use your military might to equip your sworn enemies, then your own military becomes the weapon that's being deployed to commit suicide.
I agree with you, but look at this, what's happening now. General Dempsey mm-hmm. has been for months on end, I've been reading every report he made. He was trying to tell Obama and this stupid administration, don't go to war. He was telling them, don't go to war. But he couldn't say it plain language. He gave it to them wrapped, but they're still ignoring him. He said, we are not going to succeed. He told them we're not going to succeed. Right. Unless you put ground troops, you cannot remove weapons of mass destruction by shooting them from the air. It is right. impossible.
And if you you deploy ground troops when you know that the foe has the means to launch chemical and biological weapons, you're committing murder of your own soldiers. And
absolutely.
And the problem then becomes, and if you were to prevail, and your occupation deposes that government, what chance do you have in an Islamic country that you're going to have a better government in its place? Look at Iraq. What chance do we have that a better outcome will be obtained if we were to go to war?
On a percentage? Zero.
Zero. You know,
zero.
You and I got to know one another 12 years ago, when I began to speak out on radio programs against America's invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, saying that these were suicidal invasions, they were counterproductive, they were making bad situations worse, and we needed to reverse course and pull out before more Americans and others died and that we squandered our nation's treasure. And turned out that everything we said in advance was 100% accurate. Did we have to be prophets to figure that out, or did all we have to do is take the time to understand Islam to know that there was no chance of success?
I've always said it, and you're right. I said the four horsemen of the apocalypse of Islam are called knowledge, 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 and knowledge.
Yes.
That's exactly what you have. That is exactly what I have. We studied. We spent the time. We made the effort to learn, to understand, to compare, to contrast, to come to the right conclusion. All those idiots who are running the show in Western Europe and America have not even had the decency of reading the Quran. Take take McCain. I bet he never had, read a single page of the Quran. Not one.
No. If you were to read the Quran and Hadith, both the Quran is Hadith or reports from Muhammad, but you read the Quran and Hadith, any one of the five sources that were compiled within 200 years of Muhammad's death, would you conclude that Muhammad was a terrorist?
Yes, but that's not the only conclusion I would have.
Would you conclude that he was a mass murderer?
A mass murderer, pathological liar, child molester, child rapist, serial predator upon women. I mean, what else do you want? A coward? All of them.
Yes. We will return to Shattering Myths, and we will discuss the character profile of Muhammad, the founder of the Islamic religion according to the Islamic scriptures. Welcome back to the final segment today of Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We're here with IQ, Al Rasuli, the foremost expert in the world on the true nature of Islam. We have made the statement, IQ, you and I many times, that so long as Islam is the primary force in a country, there is nothing that anyone can do to make a positive difference in that country. It just is, you could, in Iraq, for example, America could have deployed 100 million troops for 100 years and $10 trillion of its treasure. And if so long as Islam was the dominant institution in Iraq, there's no way that the United States could make Iraq better. And we nearly proved that, although we weren't there for 100 years with 100 million troops. The reason is, of course, the problem is Islam. We said that Muhammad was a terrorist. Is to call him a terrorist, is that somehow inappropriate in that maybe he did have a fight or two, but he was defending Muslims and we're stretching beyond what's reasonable? Or was Muhammad absolutely, unequivocally a terrorist?
Unequivocally, without a shadow of a doubt, a foremost terrorist ever in history.
So
I've never known anybody like him.
Yeah, in the 10 years of the Islamic era, the Hadith suggests that he led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. Is that accurate?
Well, he didn't actually lead them. Some of them he led, but the majority of them he sent.
Yeah, he inspired or led.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like Obama's not going to lead the invasion of Syria, but he's inspiring it. So Muhammad inspired or led 75 terrorist raids in 10 years, right?
This is why I called him Muhammad, the man who was the first organized crime syndicate in history based in Medina.
Yeah.
He was a mafia, a mafia leader.
Did Muslims will defend Muhammad by saying that Muhammad was defending Muslims, that Muslims were under attack, and therefore he was just a great military leader defending the lives of Muslims? Is there a shred of evidence in support of that?
Never have the Muslims been victims. Never. In the history of 1,400 years have the Muslims been victims. They have always been the victimizers. The reason is simple. They are ordered to commit jihad against every human being who is not a Muslim. Full stop.
The Americans might quibble with that and say, well, that's not true. Look at the Serbs in Kosovo. They killed a bunch of Muslims. But wouldn't it be true to say that the Serbs were actually the victims, that the Bosnian Muslims killed over 800,000 of them in brutal conditions in concentration camps during World War II, and that the Serbs were responding to having been victimized.
Absolutely. In fact, the Muslims you're talking about in Bosnia were part and parcel of the SS troops who went into Russia.
Exactly. And so then the next point I want to make, so we know for certain that Mohammed was a ruthless terrorist. And is there any community, any terrorist raid, where Mohammed actually was confronted by a military or an equal force on the other side, or were all of those terrorist raids against civilians?
Always against civilians.
So he never fought an army, did he?
Against civilians. He never fought anybody with a military. The only time the Arabs fought a military was after he was dead.
Correct. So the next question is, since Muhammad is the basis of Islam and Sharia law is based entirely on Muhammad's words and deeds, what was Muhammad's life like from a sexual point of view? Because you can learn a lot about the character of an individual if you know their sexual appetite. Was there anything peculiar about Muhammad from a sexual orientation?
Okay, if I may.
Yes.
A child rapist. A predator upon women, a dissolute and depraved creature without an iota of mercy or compassion. Maybe that's enough.
He was incestuous. He was a rapist. He was a pedophile.
Right.
I mean, we're not just saying this is our opinion. If you study, as we have done, the five sources of knowledge about Islam's formation written within 200 years of Muhammad's death, they are emphatic that Muhammad was a rapist, that he was a pedophile, that he was incestuous, and that he was a predator of women.
Correct. Without a shadow of a doubt, when one studies Muhammad, Quran, and Sunnah, one will come to a most astounding conclusion, that they self-destruct. Actually, they self-destruct, because
right.
they tell you the truth about what Muhammad was.
Right.
This is the most amazing item, but you've got to study it, not read it.
So when we read that and we see videos showing that the Mujahideen in Syria, the rebels, are raping hundreds of thousands of women and are acting like brutal terrorists killing civilians, that we should not be surprised. Are they simply following Muhammad's example?
Absolutely. They're following Muhammad's sunnah. They have to. They have no choice.
Thank you for listening. This has been Shattering Myths.